This is the Warriors Ground Podcast. The Warriors lead the Trailblazers 2-0 in the Western Conference semifinals. I'm Lawrence Scott, and on the program, Stephen Curry picks up the Magic Johnson Award. This is just after he was handed the hardware.
Appreciate you.
Congratulations.
Thanks for everything you do.
This trophy's undefeated.
A nod to the new journalistic endeavor of Mark Spears, who joined Rusty Simmons of the San Francisco Chronicle in presenting the award. Also, as the Warriors head to Portland soon for Games 3 and 4, we hear about Warriors broadcaster Jim Barnett's role in the nickname Rip City that goes hand-in-hand with Portland basketball. How Rip City came to be with Mr. B at the center of the action. Plus, former Warriors guard Justin Holiday joins us just after he got his championship ring in the moments before Game 2. As we also double up on the roundup with R.C. Davis. So let's get to it with today's tip-off. We take the time machine back a few years during a Warriors TV sit-down with Warriors broadcaster Jim Barnett in Portland, where he takes us even further back into the 70s to give us the history of Rip City.
For the fans that don't exactly know the entire story, take us back to the birth of Rip City.
Well, it was the first year of the Portland Trailblazers, and I was a member of that club, 1970-71. And we had a very competitive team, actually. There were three expansion teams, Cleveland and Buffalo. Buffalo's now the LA Clippers, but the Cleveland Cavaliers were a brand new team. We were the best of the bunch. And we had a terrific rookie in Jeff Petrie, a great center in Leroy Ellis. And, you know, I was an integral part of the club. But we were playing a game against the LA Lakers, and we were down by about 20. The Lakers were, you know, one of the great teams in the NBA at that era. Jerry West was still right at his prime. And we were down by about 20, but we made this big comeback. And I was a part of that. I got in hot, and I just knew the shot was going to go in. We didn't have a three-point line in those days. I took one that would have been probably 6 feet, 7 feet behind the three-point line today in the open court, where you really shouldn't be shooting the ball because you didn't have floor balance and everything, no play called, and it was either hit or miss. But I knew it was going in. In fact, I never saw the ball go in to the basket. I knew it was in, and I turned. It was such a long shot. I turned and started walking and, you know, jogging back the other way. And our radio announcer at that time, Bill Shonley, uttered the phrase. At first, he was kind of stumbling. He said, you know, kind of, he was questioning, what's he doing? Barnett comes across, and he's firing. And before he could get it all out, he said, Rip City. And I know Bill real well, and he said that it just came to him. He had not programmed that in. He hadn't saved it for anything. It just called for that kind of comment at that moment.
To go even further, here's the aforementioned Trailblazers broadcasting legend Bill Shonley and Jim Barnett, featured in a jazzy documentary with none other than the logo Warriors executive board member Jerry West doing the narration, taking us back to when a young Mr. B joined the Blazers.
In 1970, Barnett was traded to the expansion Portland Trailblazers, a brand new NBA team in Oregon.
I was happy in one way to get away from San Diego and get a chance again up here. And of course, coming back to Oregon, where I had a good career at the University of Oregon. And I'm looking forward to it very much, playing here in Portland. It's still a great challenge for me to come up here and play with a new club. And I'm going to learn a lot, and I hope that I can help my teammates in any way I can.
The feisty guard scored the first point in Portland history on a free throw. He averaged a career-high 18.5 points a game in his only season with the Trailblazers. Jim's greatest legacy may be hitting the shot that prompted radio announcer Bill Shonley to say, Rip City, a catchphrase that lasts today.
Rip City started midway through that first season, and we were playing the Lakers, and we were down by about 20, and we had a tremendous comeback.
Everybody was having a great time, and all of a sudden, against Wilt Chamberlain and Gail Goodrich and the rest of those mighty Los Angeles Lakers,
I came down, and it was well beyond where the three-point line would be today. It was probably about a 26 to 28 footer, and I just launched it. You know, when I got like that, I was unconscious. I didn't think about running a play. I just came down and fired.
The next basket by Portland would tie the mighty Lakers.
And Bill Shonley was kind of astounded and astonished that I would take that shot, and he was actually getting ready to criticize. He's, you know, like, what's he doing?
It looked good, and for whatever reason, when it went through the twine, I said, Rip City.
And he'd never said that before. He'd never uttered that phrase.
But that phrase turned out to be synonymous with Portland, and for that matter, all over the country.
As for some news that was shared yesterday with an award presentation at the game last night, the reigning MVP recognized once again with a league-wide honor as Stephen Curry has been selected as the winner of the Magic Johnson Award, recognizing excellence on the court with cooperation and dignity in working with the media and being accessible to fans. He was selected after a vote by the Professional Basketball Writers Association and was one of five finalists, including Warriors forward Draymond Green, Portland's Damian Lillard, Carmelo Anthony of the Knicks, and Atlanta's Paul Millsap. Here's the perspective of the San Francisco Chronicle's Rusty Simmons, one of the voters who has covered Curry and the Warriors for years.
You think of all the demands that he has on his time for being spokesman for all these different products, for the camps that he does for children, for his own work ethic. He's often the last guy on the court because he works so hard, and still he never turns down time with the media to do these interviews. You see him after he comes back from his pregame routine signing as many autographs in the tunnel as he can. He thinks those relationships are really important to what he calls the family business, which for him is NBA.
And that is a special understanding, given that he came up in the game with his father Dell playing with the Hornets and the Raptors and the Cavs, and the time he spent around the NBA looking at how you do it professionally. But when you see it done and the way he does it day in, day out, how can that help a group of journalists really communicate the best message about what's out there to communicate about a championship team like this?
Well, I think that's one of the things that Steph understands is the ability to work mutually with the media to get his message out, right? Like, the players nowadays have Twitter, and that can be their outlet to the fans. But you can also use and reach a wider body, a wider group of fans, if you use the media properly. And I think Curry understands that. Even his rookie year, he would ask us about quotes and how he was supposed to say them, how he's supposed to punctuate them, what grammar was correct. Because this stuff has always been important to him, the way he presents himself and the messages that he wants to get across.
Take us inside of some of what you do and why his accessibility is so helpful. Let's say it's a game where the Warriors are on the road and they're heading back to the Bay Area, and maybe you're traveling the next day and there's not a practice per se, but there's still a story to write. How does this accessibility help you with what you do and thus communicate what the Warriors are doing to the readers of the San Francisco Chronicle?
Yeah, it's another thing that Stephen understands. It's one of the things that he gets, is that just because he has an off day doesn't mean the media does. We still have to write something. And so this series we're talking about tonight is Portland, but if this series was coming to a close and he knew they were going to have an off day and we wanted a question about San Antonio or Oklahoma City, there's enough trust there now that he would answer the quote so that it wasn't looking like they were looking ahead. But if that happened and that series came up, we'd have that quote and we'd be ready to go. And so we've built trust with him now that he'll let us ask some questions that look like it's looking ahead a little bit, but he knows you're not going to put that out there until that's an accurate thing.
You know, another testament to this award is it's almost a who's who of the good guys of the NBA for the past 15 years that this award has been given out, with the namesake Magic Johnson. You can't get much better than that. But Steve Nash, Grant Hill, Ray Allen, this is something where it's great players and good people also being recognized.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's why I think it's such a meaningful award, is that it does take talent on the floor, but it also speaks to the person who you are off the floor. And you can't fake it for 82 games in the playoffs. You either are that person or you're not. And I think with Steph Curry, it's become obvious over his career that he's the guy who sees the importance of his relationships with the fans and with the media, and he takes that stuff very seriously.
And we do want to note that there were five total finalists, and two Warriors were amongst the finalists. Draymond Green, an incredible quote, and also a really good guy with the media, also included in this finalist list, but you can only have one winner in a given year. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Draymond in future years, not just as a finalist, but a recipient.
It's exactly right. And we give out local chapter awards. For Oakland, it's called the Alvin Aldo's Award. And Draymond and Steph were separated by only two votes. So it shows you how much the media appreciates those two guys. And it shows you nationwide how much they appreciate that they were both up for the national award. What the Warriors have done this year with the circus of media following them and the demands on their time to still take the time to do the media, to still have fun with it, I think has been remarkable.
Longtime NBA writer Mark Spears also joined Rusty in presenting Stephen with the award.
The one thing that Steph has been great about is being super accommodating to the media. You would think that after winning an MVP award, you know, things would change dramatically, that they would cut down stuff. And, you know, he not only has taken care of his Warriors obligations, but, you know, he's taken care of his different obligations for all the different endorsements he had. I saw him once do something for Brita, did a media roundtable, and then after that did four or five different other interviews that took about 3 or 4 hours. And in each interview, he was great. So to me, I think he understands his value, what stars in the league, you know, what people expect and hope from stars in the league. And I think from a media standpoint, he's exceeded that.
We'll hear from Justin Holliday in a moment, but first, part one of the Roundup with RC.
On this latest edition of the Roundup, we begin with Golden State. Where else would you start? NBA TV's Dennis Scott was asked prior to the West Semis how the Warriors would do heading into this series versus Oakland's own Damian Lillard and the upstart Blazers.
Do you think that the Portland Trail Blazers can put up a good fight in this conference semifinal against Golden State?
A good fight, a puncher's chance, as we say, a shooter's chance, because we know what that backcourt can do. But this team is going to go in there with a lot of confidence because, like you said, the rest of the world's picking the Warriors. Right. So am I.
You're not going to go out on a limb on this one?
No, that limb is a little too fragile.
But I just believe the Clippers showed us so much in this game. And the way they battled, going on the road and fighting. It came down to the final shot of the game.
It really did. And to go back to your last question, and to Damian Lillard's point, you're going home to play in front of mom, dad, grandma, the neighborhood. The reason he wears the O on his chest, that's not zero, it's for Oakland.
Yes.
So that will have some to do with it. Because for all you Damian Lillard fans and Blazers fans, that will have something to do with it. And knowing Dame a little bit, like I've known him now the last couple of years, he's not going to get too high and try to overdo it. He's not going to try to get 40 or 50, but he's going to make sure his imprint is definitely on these games.
How does he do that? I mean, obviously he knows now because he's been an all-star and he's a veteran player. But how do you not get too caught up in this in a postseason series in your hometown?
Well, I think being the savvy young vet that he is, he has a big contract already. So now it's time for him to relax and let the world know how he was able to beat the Clippers tonight with this great suit he has on.
All right, dangerous.
The Warriors went 73-9 in the regular season and now must just go 10-9 to defend their NBA crown. Baron Davis was on ESPN's His and Hers and was asked by Michael Smith, if he were NBA Coach of the Year, Steve Kerr, would he rest Steph Curry?
Speaking of the Warriors, we were arguing about this earlier. For some reason, Jamel is just offended by the idea of being conservative with Steph Curry's health. Have you been following that story? And if you were Steve Kerr, would you hold him back?
You know, I think Steve Kerr is a great coach. And, you know, I kind of trust his judgment. I would do the same thing. You know, somebody as talented as Steph, you know, playing in the series where you're up 2-0, I wouldn't put him out there, you know, if it's questionable. You know, I would want my primary player to be all the way healthy. And, you know, those guys, Draymond, Clay, Sean Livingston, you know, they did a great job in game two of really just picking up the slack. So, you know, they've trusted their team the whole year. And I would sit Steph another game if that's what Steve Kerr is going to do.
Thank you.
Well, luckily, I'm going to treat Baron like a guest and say I'm not going to respond to that necessarily, but we will stay on the topic of the Warriors. Your former teammate, Steven Jackson, he said recently that he felt like you guys' Warriors team that upset Dallas, as everybody remembers, would beat this current group of Warriors. Where do you stand in agreement with S-Jax?
You know, Steven Jackson is my brother, and of course, I'm a ride with him, but, you know, in facts and actuality, I think this Warriors team is one of the greatest teams to go down in NBA history. You know, I don't think that our team could have really kept up because this Warriors team is really, really too deep. You know, they go 1 through 16, and, you know, a lot of times it was, you know, 4 or 6 of us, you know, carrying a heavy load for the Warriors, but. You know, it'll be a good game. It'd be a fun game to play. But you know, this is one of the greatest teams in the regular season to play, and also the defending champ. So we ain't win no championships. So I don't know.
Well, as you know, they already moved past the Bulls, rather, in terms of their single season, regular season record. In your mind, do they have to win the title to be considered one of the greatest teams ever, this particular, you know, version of the Warriors?
Well, I think they want to, you know, they definitely want to win the title, and that was their mission the whole year, is to win the NBA championship. You know, to have that record in the regular season, you know, it's only right that they go all the way and win the championship. Or else, you know, that's not what they were in the season for, not for the record, but for the NBA championship. So, you know, it's definitely something that I think that they have a great, great chance of doing. And if they do, they'll go down as one of the greatest teams ever.
Following game two, where the Warriors came back from a 17-point deficit to take a 2-0 lead, ESPN's Mr. Negative, Skip Bayless, gave credit where credit was due.
I must pay my respects to these Stephless Golden State Warriors. Stephen A. Smith, they're down 11 going into the fourth quarter. Largest deficit they'd faced all year at home. Previously, they'd faced deficits at home in the regular season of 9, 8, and 7. And of course, they'd made up all three and won all three of those games. And they proceeded to do just the same again. And I am sorry to say, I stayed up to watch the whole thing because I thought we were about to have a series, at least a series that was going to force the hand of the Golden State Warriors to play Steph Curry in a game 3 at Portland. And I watched 34-12 Golden State in the fourth quarter. I'm going to repeat, 34-12 was the score in the fourth quarter. And that was a moment where I sat back with about a minute left in the game, Stephen A., and I thought, you know what? I think my Spurs and those Thunders are battling their guts out for the right to finish second in the West, for the right to lose to Golden State in the conference finals. That's how impressive that squad was last night. Without Steph Curry, I've said before on the show, I didn't think that squad could have even made the playoffs this year in the West without Steph the whole year. I'm going to back off that. After what I saw last night, that was highly impressive. And I must throw this in. After you disrespected my school, Vanderbilt University, and its lack, you said, of basketball tradition, I just want to point out that there's this guy on Golden State named Festus Ezeli who played at my school, Vanderbilt, my alma mater. And he obviously missed 31 straight games late in the year off knee surgery, got punked on April the 1st, April Fool's Day, and then last night returned to punk the Portland Trailblazers in the fourth quarter. Festus Ezeli last night had played 4 minutes until the fourth quarter. He played almost 9 minutes, went 4 for 4 in the fourth, with five rebounds and a big emotional game-changing block of Plumlee. And Steve Kerr raved about, I watched the post game on TNT, Steve Kerr just raved about Festus Ezeli.
And now to wrap up the Golden State portion of the roundup, basketball is just as much culture as it is global sport. We understand that here at Warriors Ground. That's why we bring you hip-hop icons like Fab Five Freddy, streetball historians like Scoop Jackson, and so on. And so on. As Lawrence has explained before, I act as the curator on this podcast, providing any and all basketball related stories and sound you might have missed from the week that was. I must admit I'm a tad late to the party on this, as it was posted nearly 2 years ago, but regardless, here is a local MC E-Money dropping a Joe Lacob line into his freestyle.
I'm a ball in the bag with courtside connects to the three, then I shake Joe Lacob's hand. Gotta face the damn facts, you beg you.
Hilarious stuff right there. That'll do it for the Dubs portion of the podcast. I'll be back with sound from around the association in a bit. Lawrence?
In the pregame of Tuesday's Game 2 against Portland at Oracle Arena, former Warriors guard Justin Holiday was given his 2015 NBA championship ring by head coach Steve Kerr and GM Bob Myers. Holiday started the season in Atlanta, but was traded mid-season to the Bulls and never got a chance to play this past regular season at Oracle Arena. So here in the playoffs, he dropped by and we chatted for a moment.
Yeah, I mean, this ring pretty much just brings it all together. Like, looking at it now and seeing, you know, we have everybody's hands coming in, touching the trophy, and just looking at everything, like, just shows how much of a team we were and how us being a team like that is what we needed, you know, to win the championship. So, you know, I'm glad I'm here and finally to get this ring, the last one to complete it all. And, you know, it's a good experience, man.
How was life in Chicago now?
It's good. It's cold, but it's good. Yeah, I love the city. I've actually gone around and seen a lot of different sports teams play, and just the pride they have down there for their sports and things like that, and then the history of Chicago and everything, it's been good. So, you know, I'm glad I'm where I am right now, and I'm going to enjoy it.
Last thing here, when you think back to all of what went down last year, what sticks with you?
How we all were pretty much like brothers. Like, every time I see any one of them, it's like I've never left, and like we're right back on the same beat. The relationships we all made, and, you know, obviously winning the championship, but that all happened because of the relationship we had with each other and how, you know, we came together, and it just all fit perfectly.
Awesome seeing you. Thanks so much, Justin.
Thank you.
All right, let's wrap things up. Going back to RC, scanning the airwaves to bring you the roundup.
RC Davis here. Lip Sync Battle was a show on Spike TV that was spawned from executive producer Jimmy Fallon, who has been doing the lip sync bit for years on The Tonight Show. The show is hosted by LL Cool J and has various artists, celebs, and athletes perform in front of a live studio audience in Las Vegas. Here, Chris Paul was to face Snoop in a dog-eat-dog battle. Sorry for the pun. We all have seen CP3 on those State Farm ads playing Cliff Paul, but this is different. No retakes, no timeouts, all talent. Take a listen.
All right, Chris, how are you feeling heading into your very first lip sync battle?
Very nervous.
Yeah?
But I'm ready.
You feel centered? You feel like this is your moment?
I do think this is my moment. You know, for a long time I've been playing that game, basketball. I've been playing it for a while, but I really think this is my calling. And last night while I was asleep, a voice came to me and told me this is where I belong.
Was the voice lip syncing to you?
It sure was.
What was it lip syncing?
It sure was. It said,
I love it. Now, what are you taking from the game of, what did you call it? What was it?
Basketball.
Basketball. Okay. I'll Wikipedia it later. Now, what are you taking from that you're going to apply to the lip sync?
When you're playing in your games, you always need the crowd support. The crowd really helps you win a lot of games, believe it or not. And I think here I'm going to need the crowd.
Now, if you could say anything to the DOGG right now into the camera, what would you say?
Even though you were doing it before I was born, I was in my mom's womb and I was practicing for this day. I was just ready for the opportunity to lip sync battle against you, Snoop, and today is that day, and it's not going to be a good day for you.
Speaking of Chris Paul, his Clippers fell to the Trailblazers in the first round, and after the deciding game in which Austin Rivers sustained 11 stitches to the eye region, the coach's son talked about how big an impact teammate Jamal Crawford has been.
He's the best teammate I've ever had, man. You know, a lot of people doubted me when I came to, you know, L.A. a year ago. You know, people thought I was just getting a chance because my father. And Jamal was the one who, you know, Jamal believed in me, man. Come a long way.
Lakers co-owner and president Jeannie Buss appeared on Fox Sports Radio's Colin Cowherd and was asked about the recent season and how they move forward from Kobe and Byron Scott.
But you weren't satisfied, obviously,
no.
Because he has...
Who would be with that
right,
record?
Who would be? So, and again, a criticism I levied against the organization was, listen, Kobe Bryant is Magic Johnson is Kareem. There are iconic Jeter, DiMaggio, Mantle players. I understand that. It did feel like to me that part of the Kobe victory tour was as much about business, Time Warner making this franchise interesting, as it was about basketball. Is it fair for me to say part of the Kobe victory tour, it was business beyond basketball?
This team, this organization is about winning basketball games. There was no plan of, you know, making it about a Kobe retirement tour. As a matter of fact, we didn't know he was going to be announcing his retirement until the season started this past year. What we went into this season was knowing we were going to celebrate 20 years of Kobe for the fact that he was on our team for 20 years. I don't think you'll see that again in the NBA or maybe even any professional sport, especially we don't draft players that young anymore.
Right.
And so just to have the longevity of career with one team is really remarkable. So, you know, in terms of running an operation to just make money as a business, then you're in the wrong business. This organization is about winning basketball games and about making the city of Los Angeles proud for their sports team.
Who says we are one-dimensional on this podcast? We can go national, if not international. Just the other day, Korean-American Kenneth Bae, convicted by North Korea on charges of planning to overthrow the North Korean government, was released after serving 735 days in captivity. Upon his arrival stateside, he thanked, among others, Dennis Rodman. Rodman's supposed friends with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un had come to the aid of the dictator against the well wishes of the United States government, only to, as Bae puts it, begin the dialogue to get him home.
Well, I thank Dennis Rodman for being a catalyst for my release, because his rant and my media attention and my plight was increased. So if I meet him someday, I just want to say thank you for for what he has done to really brought attention, international attention for my plight.
So Kenneth Bae thanks Dennis Rodman, even though he was making these dangerous allegations, because at least it brought attention to the situation.
And it all together worked out for good for my release. So I just say, well, I'm grateful for him to trying out for my release.
If you did not see the end of the Spurs Thunder game 2 the other night, it was, well, a mess.
Inbounds pass from Waiters. He's having a hard time getting it in. He lobs it out front, and Durant had it knocked away. Picked up by Danny Green. Lobs to Patty Mills. He finds Ginobili, baseline right. Manu in the lane, flips it inside. Now to the corner, it is Mills for three. No. Rebound, Aldridge had it stripped. And there's the buzzer as the Spurs scramble for it, and this ball game is over.
The next day, the NBA came out with their officiating report stating that the league's officials had missed 5 calls in the final moments. 5. Reggie Miller, who called the game for TNT, in conversation with Dan Patrick, talked about the fiasco.
Reggie Miller called the Hawks-Cavs game 1 last night. He'll be doing Wednesday night's game 2 at 8 Eastern on TNT. Still one of the great shooters in America. The Hall of Famer, Reggie Miller, joining us. Did you ever meet Tupac?
Yes, we actually were in a movie together. Now, my scene hit the cutting room floor, but do you remember the movie Gang Related with Jim Belushi that starred Tupac? I was in that film as well.
What was your... Did you play you?
I played me as a hot dog vendor. It was during the first lockout, and... I was supposed to have fallen on hard times, and I was a hot dog vendor, but it didn't make the movie.
Did you have dialogue?
I did, with Tupac and with Jim. It was pretty funny, actually. I can't believe it didn't make it.
Do you remember your lines?
No, absolutely not. How are you, my friend?
I'm good.
So what happened last night? Did something go down that I'm not really...
Oh, my God, Red. How do you explain this? This is why
I say the two-minute report that's now coming out, that the officials come out and they basically grade their performance in the last 2 minutes, this goes to what I've always said about our game and the NBA officials, especially in late-game situations, that the officials always swallow their whistle and let the players decide the game. As egregious as fouls may be or non-calls, they always let the players decide the games. And last night was no different. There was 2 calls, obviously the OKC Spurs call, but there was a call in our game that I had never seen before where they had to huddle up and they were kind of scratching their heads. Now, they ended up making the right call. If you remember the foul that I believe it was Shumpert on Millsap that pushed Millsap into the shooting Kyle Korver while he was shooting threes, well, the foul occurred on Millsap, but they gave Korver the 3 free throws, and it was almost like the domino effect. We had never seen that before, and I guarantee you that was one of the main reasons why the officials huddled up and came over the correct call. But that call in the Spurs Thunder, no one had ever seen that before.
But first of all, Dion Waiters taking the ball out of bounds, which I don't want. And then, Ginobili is on the line. You see his foot on the line crowding him. And then you get the forearm shiver.
Russell Westbrook is running out of bounds and coming back in bounds. I'm questioning if he could have caught the basketball on that. But Danny Green fouled Kevin Durant while the ball was in the air, while Durant was going down. That was a foul that was non-called. If I was Patty Mills, I would have pump faked and let Steven Adams run right into me. That would have been a foul. And then the offensive rebound by LaMarcus Aldridge easily could have been a foul.
Yep.
But again, I always say the officials swallow their whistles, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it's always been that. For 18 years that I played, they let players decide the games. I know people are all up in arms. To me, the blatant lie is to say that they missed the call when the official is counting you off and looking right at you. So how can you say you didn't see Dion Waiters elbow, shove, whatever you want to describe it? You can't say that the official didn't see it, because the official is right on the play behind counting the 5 seconds. That's what gets people so upset about.
Yeah, and I understand that you could have missed Ginobili's foot being on the line, which if you start there with the...
That's easy. But again, foot on the line is just a delay of game, and then you restart. What Waiters did is a change of possession. That changes things. That becomes Spurs ball, timeout for the Spurs, where Popovich can draw up a play. And everyone's saying, well, they got the ball. Yes, they got the basketball, but wouldn't you want a timeout, change of possession, where Pop can draw up a play, very much like he did to get Aldridge fouled on a three-pointer? I would take that as opposed to a scrambled play where you had the wrong people taking the shot, like Patty Mills in the corner.
Yeah, you have a 3-on-1. You got to capitalize against Steven Adams. San Antonio, I said this, San Antonio should never have been in that situation where you needed help to win that game.
And one play does not define a game. Yeah. I know everyone's all up in arms. It's time for us to move on. It happened. It's not going to, you know, you're not going to replay the game or those last 14 seconds. And you're right, a 3-on-1 situation, when Danny Green got the ball, instead of throwing it ahead to Patty Mills, he had Manu Ginobili to his right. If he would have passed the ball to Ginobili, it would have been a much simpler play, because then you would have had a 2-on-1, or Ginobili almost had a step or two in front of Steven Adams, where he probably would have got fouled by Adams going in for the lay-in.
Sticking with the Dan Patrick Show for a moment, the multi-time Emmy winner had Chris Webber on the show to talk about not only that controversial game, but others that were somewhat questionable in outcome.
Chris, does this come back to Tim Donaghy, that the NBA wants to be transparent because Donaghy, the former official, said that, you know, games were fixed? Is that what this is all about?
I think yes, and I think it's just about this day and age. The internet, I think it's about fans having so much more access. If I were to have this access to my favorite players in 89 when the Pistons were playing and everything like that, you know, I would have been one of those guys screaming, oh, the Celtics are cheating the Pistons for no reason. You know, I just would have just been on that bandwagon. So I kind of get it. It's from the internet, but I do love the fact that I hope NBA embraces the fact that it's still exciting. Even the controversy, even this, we're talking about it. And it, as long as the fans know, hey, guys are missing calls, it's not. And I do think, believe me, it's a lot about Donaghy I would like to talk about. I do think a lot of it is from that time, but hopefully we just keep the fans' trust, which we do, which is why I think the NBA wants to be transparent and say at the end of games that they missed the call. You know, in football, my Lions, we always get hurt, especially with the touchdowns. Is it a touchdown? Is it not a touchdown? The catches with Megatron. And so I have to look at it like, as a fan, I've never played a day in football. I love it when they say we missed the call, because at least as a fan, it lets me hold on to the fact that, hey, maybe we got hosed, maybe we didn't. But I don't mind the transparency.
He's Chris Webber, NBA on TNT analyst. But you were playing when Donaghy was officiating. Did you ever think that there was something going on, that a game was fixed, or that he was fixing a game?
I've definitely played a game. I've played one game in which, yes, something smelled very weird about the whole situation. But I didn't think that was the NBA, and in technicals and things like that, I never thought the NBA was purposely out to get me, or purposely to make our team lose, or purposely stay within the spread. Never felt that way.
But was Donaghy officiating? Was Donaghy officiating that game?
You know what? I'm not sure. I think it would be easy to go back and look and see, but I really haven't watched that game out of knowing that I didn't foul, out of knowing that it was offensive fouls on other players, after seeing blood run down Bibby's nose, after other things like that. So, it's human nature for a guy to use their power, and I think that's why you always need someone to hold them accountable. And in basketball games, I remember the game I did that Golden State lost to Minnesota. They took a point away on a charge, and Golden State's at home, and Minnesota takes a charge. It was a terrible call, and I didn't feel like the refs were cheating, but Minnesota needs the same respect as Golden State on this night, and I think that's what that I afford, that I look at, like, the situation of both players. So I really don't care who wins. I didn't win a championship, and if guys aren't going to give me their ring, then, hey, all of them, go fight for it yourself. And so I just like keeping the even keel because, Dan, you know, I've been on the team and the Wizards that played against the Bulls. All I wanted was for the refs to treat us fair because Jordan and those guys didn't need any help. And, of course, they didn't need any help, and they beat us. And then I was on teams where we played others, and we had the advantage. And, you know, just want to make sure that it's fair and you give guys the same respect, whether they shoot 50% from the three-point line or 0% from the free-throw line. You don't want guys guessing. And so, I've been definitely in the game like that, and I definitely believe it has happened before, but no, that's not the culture or the way of the league, and I'm glad that they're staying transparent with fans.
This was a game against the Lakers, and Bibby's bleeding, and Kobe was not called for a foul, right?
Yeah, I knew you were going to find it, so I wouldn't have to kind of say it and sound like a whiner, because that's the thing. I mean, you know, it happened, and it's over, and as an athlete, so this is kind of my feel. As an athlete, yes, it happened. I believe that. Now, as an athlete, so what it happened? What am I going to do, make excuses? We lost. So that's the balance, and that's what you hear from Ginobili. That's what you hear from, you know, Popovich. But that the fire is still there, you know, wanting to go back in time and play is still there, even though you can't do it. So it's not like you sit around whining or wondering, oh, what if, and oh, my God. But the truth is the truth. And so hearing the NBA say, you know what, we missed that call, at least it just puts a stamp on the narrative that this is what happened, but hey, you still lost. What the baby's going to do? Get up, quit crying, and live another day. That's basically what you going to do.
We end things this time around on the roundup with the leader of the free world and Steph Curry's golfing buddy, Barack Obama, here at the annual Correspondents' Dinner, channeling his inner Kobe Bryant, and dare I say, drop the mic.
What can I say? Mamba out.
And with that, I just have two more words to say. Obama out.
That'll do it for the roundup. Lawrence.
All right, thank you so much for joining us. More NBA playoffs coverage ahead. I'm Lawrence Scott. Looking forward to the next time that we get together here on Warriors Ground.